Welcome back to the Jack of No Trades podcast. This is a podcast about people and what they do. I'm your host, Michelle McAllister, and for this episode, I sat down with Don Jenkins. This was my first international interview as Don and his companies are located in Melbourne, Australia. We mainly spoke about his first company called Granicrete, although he did mention some of the others that are in the works. If you have like an entrepreneurial spirit, if you're interested in hearing about how someone keeps the professional edge or what makes them jump into a new partnership, this episode is for you. A huge thank you to Don for sitting down with me. He was very gracious with his time. He was just the nicest guy, and I think he had some really good tips and advice in there as well. So here is my conversation with Don Jenkins. Do me a favor and give me a quick intro, like what's your name, what's your title, and what do you do?
That's always, that is an interesting question because we work in a very like artistic field of flooring. So when people say, you know, what do you do? I just kind of almost stutter because it's like, well, if I could show you some photos, that would be a lot better way to show what we do, because people are like, what do you mean that you put a, you know, a couple millimeter thickness layer over the top of tiles and make art into flooring? I don't get it. What are you talking about? You know? So it's pretty cool because it is a conversation piece, what we do sure, because it takes a long time to explain what we do.
Right.
But we just make people happy through flooring, I suppose. You know, that's probably about the best way to put it.
But are you Australian native, or you said you came down to Australia?
So I was born in Sacramento, California. So I'm an American. Okay. My family's all American and whatnot, and at least for several generations. So when I met my wife, we've been married for 26 years ago. She's Australian, mm-hmm. and half Serbian, half Croatian, and first generation Australian. And so when she moved to Australia to the US to help her sister with her sister's business and new baby and everything, when we met, we just knew immediately that we were going to get married. Literally in 2 months, she goes like, if we get married, I want to move to Australia. I don't want kids. I want da-da-da-da. And I was like, man, girl, I've only known you for 2 months, but okay, I like this. You know, this is cool. And within less than a year of meeting, we were actually married, and it's been 25 years. So
it turned out okay. So you started Granicrete? Am I saying it correctly?
Granicrete, Australia. And the reason it has Granicrete Australia is because my best friend, Tim Phelps, who now owns iCoat Products in the States in Phoenix, Arizona, he started Granicrete International. And that kind of blew up shortly after I moved to Australia, actually. But I'd already put in, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of marketing the company under that name. And I wasn't about to change it just because that partnership down there fell apart and whatnot. Right. Just Granicrete Australia. And we're kind of rebranding into just Granicrete. But even though it does still say Granicrete Australia, we'll just drop the Australia and just go Granicrete. But the explanation of the name is basically granite and concrete. And we make concrete look like granite, basically. So we put the two together and just made up a name.
For somebody who's not familiar with what that means, what are the benefits of having concrete look like granite? Like,
well, let's say that you... Yeah, well, let's just say that you have a desire to not have grout lines in your floor, for instance.
Okay.
So our flooring is completely seamless. Like, there's no seams in the house whatsoever. So there's nowhere for dirt to get trapped and all those kinds of things. Not only that, but it's also extremely artistic. So we have, like, say we go into a house, and I'll use American terms, and there's like, you know, a 500 square foot floor or something like that. And instead of grout lines everywhere, there is just a seamless floor that flows and ebbs through the house and just kind of just like is an artistic piece. So we can stain that. We can use metallic epoxies, which are fuchsia pink and purple polka dots if we wanted to. You know, it's actually just a really, really fun industry to be in.
Now, you said on your website that you started off originally with a waterfall as your initial inspiration that got you started on this road. What was it about flooring that you're like, now this is where I want to be? Like, I want to go into this.
Yeah. So like when I was 5 years old, I was mesmerized by this waterfall that my uncle had made. And it was like a wall hanging, right? And because he lived in San Jose, it was like this beach feature. So it was like driftwood, and then he would hammer copper leaves and stuff like that. They would, and then a water pump, and it would never spill the drop of water. And it would pump the water up to this leaf, then that would just turn and go down the driftwood into another leaf and so on down the thing. So all my whole life, I was like, I want to build a waterfall. I want to build a waterfall. I want to build a waterfall, you know? And so when I bought my first house, I was like, I'm going to build a waterfall. My wife's like, what? You know, what are you talking about? You've never even said you wanted to build a waterfall. Now you're going to build a waterfall. Now you don't understand. When I was 5 years old. So when I met Tim Phelps, who owns ICO Products now, that was like this magical thing, because he sold products. I was told by people in my church, actually, that he sold products to make waterfalls. And I was like, what do you mean, rocks and mortar and a water pump? What do you mean, you know? They go, no, it's some kind of lightweight concrete. So I was like, what are you talking about? And it was really, really cool when I met him. I was like, what do you mean that you have a lightweight concrete that has styrofoam beads in it that you shape to make it look like a rock, and then you coat it with different cement products, and then you make it look like you sculpt rocks? So I became a waterfall sculptor in a few years. I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. I get to use some of my artistic ability, a lot of artistic ability. And I got to the point where I could literally hear the waterfall as I was making it. So I would make a little bit of water, divert over to this and get like high notes over here, and then the rushing, you know, bass notes in the middle of it, and just kind of almost like a symphony of a waterfall. And so when I learned that he also sold like and taught flooring products out, so it was mainly around pool surrounds and sidewalks and stuff like that, I was like, well, that's kind of cool as well, because, you know, you're making it look like stone. And we were making it look like flagstone in Arizona. It was just like big paving patterns and stuff mm-hmm. like that at that point. And then we started going, okay, how can we bring this into our house? How can we do this? So we really invented different ways of bringing that type of flooring, the micro cement overlays, into homes. And so we took an outdoor product, made it an indoor product, and really made some beautiful things. And when I came to Australia, when I moved to Australia 16 years ago now, it was in the middle of a drought in Melbourne, mm-hmm. Melbourne, Australia. Victoria is kind of on the bottom, just above Tasmania. There was very little market for a waterfall in the middle of a 15-year drought.
Fair.
So I really had to decide, okay, I'm not going to do waterfalls here, even though I shipped an entire container of waterfall material over from Phoenix to Melbourne to make waterfalls. That quickly decided, well, that's not going to work. So we're going to go into the flooring side of it. And so we really centered on the flooring side here in Melbourne and in Australia. And it's gone actually quite well. That decision was probably the best decision, obviously, because the waterfalls weren't going to work. I've made a few indoor waterfalls, which were really cool, industrial ones, not industrial ones, but like commercial. We did one for Moondog Brewery, and they have this massive restaurant, and it's themed, and it's all this around a water park sort of thing. And we made this 20 foot high waterfall that was only, it was only off the wall about that far. So it was like very, very thin, but very tall. So it's about 15 foot wide, 25 feet high, 20 feet high. And it just comes down like that inside the restaurant. So that was pretty cool. Pretty. So I got to use that skill there. So.
What did you want to be when you grew up? Did you see yourself going into something similar to like construction, building materials, something creative like this? Or you're like, I thought I was going to be a business guy or something?
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely a business guy now. Sure. You know, I'm in part of several different businesses, and the next one I'm going into in the next week or so, I will actually own a small portion of a restaurant. It's an Italian themed restaurant, and it's going to be like Italian street food. Now, Italy doesn't have street food, but it's more home cooked Italian food, and it's very quick. So they have all the ingredients, they put it together, they do what they're going to do, and they give it to you. Now get the hell out, because the next customer is coming, you know? And it's literally going to be called No Time for Grace. That's it. It's kind of
nice name. I like it. What
cool concept? Do you have any,
so, Do you have other businesses on top of that?
No, I have a couple of different businesses. They're all much smaller than Granite Creed Australia. My main business is Granite Creed Australia. And I have a few other ones that we're starting with other business owners and whatnot. I'm just always looking for opportunities to partner with people. I absolutely love partnerships. I love being able to work with people because if, for instance, I have a product that I want to market, I'm not the greatest at marketing something, right? In another business that I'm starting now, I've literally teamed up with a person who has a marketing company. So we're going 50-50. Okay. I have products that I'm bringing in from different parts of the world and she's going to market it. So I love that partnership. So when I say I own that business, I do own that business. I'm 50% ownership, but all I do is find products that I love and I bring it in, she markets it and she sells it. And I love that partnership. Could I learn how to market it? Could I go on Facebook and market those things the same way that I do with my own company, with Granite Creed Australia? Yes, absolutely, I could. I love the fact that I'm hiring 25. I've got a partner who has 25 years experience in marketing. Mm-hmm. That. Right. I don't need 25 years experience marketing. I have that. It's there. Well, and
if that's not your passion, then I mean.
Yeah, that's right.
Let somebody else take that portion of it. It seems. Yeah.
And it's a new mindset, really. I've only had this kind of mindset for the last 2 or 3 years, really. I've always thought that I had, you know, business was about growing from the ground up. And you have to start and put your own money into it and put your own labor into it. And it's like, well, how am I going to do that with different businesses and everything else? And really, I just was like, okay, you know, I have now a mentor that teaches different mindsets in business and whatnot. And I just went, oh, wow. So I have, you know, 5 businesses now that are semi-profitable or just starting, you know, in the last 3 years that I'm really quite happy with and passionate about.
Did you go out looking for your mentor, or was that something that was sort of happenstance?
It's actually interesting. I hired an accountant when I first got here, and then he brought on this guy that was like kind of a business coach. Uh-huh. Never even heard of the concept before that. So, but their partnership split up, but I stayed with the business coach, and he started getting me reading books like John Maxwell's, well, here's one right here, Invaluable Laws of Growth, for instance. And he started me just thinking about things in different ways and growing myself and growing my mind and trying to, you know, be a better person and a better leader. And leadership is where I probably struggled at the time, because there was a lot of childhood trauma and stuff like that I had to work through. And then how was I supposed to run a business and lead somebody when I didn't even know who I was or where I was about or anything else, you know? Right. So, and those things weren't known to me at the time. I didn't know that I was lost. I didn't know that I had no clue of what I was doing, you know? But you start studying and you start going, okay, well, oh yeah, leadership is something that I need because I have a business, you know, right?
Right.
I want to grow. And so John Maxwell, he's an American. His entire business is all about leadership. And I loved his style. I loved his, you know, taking your personal responsibility. And so when you go, okay, when you start along that path, then you start looking for mentors. You start looking for people. You start going, not only am I, let's just say I'm in a factory and there's a kind of a personal like connection with the guy that owns the factory, for instance. Well, as soon as I'm going, okay, well, we're going to do this floor for you. Hey, can I buy you lunch? I would just want to talk to you about your business style, your kind of thing. So I've had millions of lunches with people or just sat down right then and started talking about it. And so I'm constantly looking for mentors, but I pay a lot of money also for mentorship and personal growth and whatnot. The biggest one right now that I'm going through is a group called Aaron Sansoni. Mm-hmm. It's a guy here in Melbourne that runs the most fabulous business coaching I've ever seen, like incredible. Real life teachings about how to run your business, how to grow an empire. And that's probably, you know, why I own 5 businesses now, because I'm building an empire. But it's all about what do I like? I love that. You know, it's not just about money and that looks like it's profitable. It's about what am I passionate about? Find my own passions and then go, if I can be passionate about that, like Italian food, for instance, and restaurants. And I'm actually working with that restaurant is being built by one of my clients who I sat down at lunch with and asked him about his business style and so on and so forth. So, and we've been really good friends and I've done a lot of his factory floors and whatnot. He owns a gelati factory that does 6,000 liters or quarts, should I say, of gelati a day he makes, and he ships it all over the world. So yeah, and that's, so my passion for food and things like that has led to the opportunity to be in part of his business, going into the restaurant business that he's building himself. So cool. Yeah, so do I look for mentorship every day, every minute, every second? It's just I look for opportunity.
Is there anything that you look for specifically when you're looking for someone either to mentor with or partner with? Is there any I guess major characteristics that you're like, you would be good to follow, or do you just kind of follow it organically and just see you know, through trial and error, I like to work with this person might not be a good fit for me?
I think initially there has to be that connection. If there's a connection, then obviously there's going to be something that I like about that person. They have to be ethical. They have to be, like, if somebody says to me, oh, you know what, I did this and that customer paid me, it was like, I just charged him like up the butt for this product or whatever, you know, I wouldn't be interested for 1 second about talking to that person about their style. I already know their style and I'm not interested. You know, I'm very interested in people with passion. If they love what they're doing, if they have been successful, they have to be successful. Otherwise, you know, I don't want to, I'm not interested in talking to people, you know, that have just failed every single time. You know, when you want to hear about some success, I do want to know about failures. I fail all the time, but I have successes as well. I think that initial connection is what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, how do you even break into, hey, tell me about what you do, you know?
Right.
I've tried that actually with some people that were hugely successful, right? There's a company called Amcor here, and we did a floor for the CEO of that company, hugely successful, didn't have time for me. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool, you know? But I'm literally having a conversation with him, but he didn't have a time to even connect in any shape or form or way or whatever, you know, he was beyond that or whatever. Right. And that was cool. So it has to be that connection first, has to be ethical, has to be willing to learn from me as well, because I have a lot of experience. So there has to be that kind of communication, not just a one way, I'm going to teach you this. So yeah, that's, I do look for that. And I might just sneak in, even though I don't have a connection, I might just go, I want to know this. I want to know this about you. And then that's it. You know, that's all I can get, really. But like, it is different when you're willing to pay a business coach.
True.
For instance, the Aaron Sansoni group, for instance, I pay a lot of money to be part of that group. And I'm in the EC family, which is like, we pay a lot of money to, and then we have like immersions and stuff like that every quarter. There's a lot of business like coaching that he gives me. And then we have like another coach that I talk to every couple of weeks as well. So that is different to like a mentorship that I might have a relationship with somebody and actually have that real connection with them and be able to learn from them. Mm-hmm. So the mentorship that I have decided to pay for simply follows the guidelines that I set for myself, in that they're ethical, they're way above where I'm at. In other words, I'm not going to pay somebody to be my coach who is at my level. How can they bring me up?
Right.
Yeah, if they're at my level, you know? So I'm looking for anybody who has a huge level of success. Aaron Sansoni himself owns well over 50 businesses. It's worth, you know, $50 to $100 million, whatever it is. So when I look at, am I going to spend money on something? It's going to be something that is so much more like way above where I am at.
That makes sense.
And he has his mentors. He has his mentors. So he works with people that are, you know, 200 million, 400 million, $1 billion. That's what his mentors are. So I'm always looking for something in mentorship that is beyond where I'm at, whether it be in leadership, whether it be in the number of employees you manage or your revenue. Yeah, these are things that I'm looking for.
What about people that work for you? What do you look for when you're trying to bring somebody onto one of your teams? And like, is there anything that you're like, I'm sorry, without this characteristic, you're just not going to be successful here?
Yeah, number one characteristic that you have to have working in anything that I'm involved in is honesty. Since we go into a house and the house is worth $10 million and the people are worth well more than that, they may have $100,000 or $500,000 diamond ring that's sitting on the table. Anybody I hired would not be tempted to even touch that ring, much less take it. The same goes for somebody who has, in Australia, there's not a house less than $500,000, unfortunately, anymore, but a $500,000 house. And they have a $5 bill or a $2 coin sitting on the benchtop or their floor. Or we, you know, we're grinding and there's a dollar coin on the floor or whatever. They're not going to be tempted to take that. I've always gone along the theory of, you know, integrity starts with a paperclip. Mm-hmm. And that saying is basically, if you're going to take a paperclip from your office, if you're going to steal that, then your integrity is worth that paperclip, and that's it. And so the integrity of all of my guys on the floor, in the office, whatever we're doing, if I get a call and say, hey, Don, I'm missing this, do you think maybe one of you guys took it? The answer is no, absolutely not. We're not interested in anybody else's tools. If we go on to sites and there's 15 different other trades there, and there's some of them have the same tools, I don't want one of their tools ending up in my truck. And I can say in 15 years, the only thing that has ever happened like that has been by pure accident. And we make go through great efforts to return anything that's ever not ours. So that is the integrity and honesty. If I can detect somebody lying to me in an interview or exaggerating about what their experience is or something like that, I'm just not interested. And that's more important to me than, let's say that somebody comes to me and they go, oh, I've got 10 years of polishing concrete. Mm-hmm. And epoxy flooring and everything else, and I'm the best out there. They have the best skills out there, and I don't have that connection with them, and I don't believe what they're saying or don't trust what they're saying. If they're the least bit untrustworthy, it's going to be more of a headache than it's worth.
Right.
And in the long run, it's just going to frustrate the really good guys that I do have. So why would I go hit my best guys with a hammer? You know, right. We just wouldn't do that. You know, they want to come to work and have a great time going to work. All my guys are actually end up being friends because they're part of a really good team. And so that's what I'm looking for is, you know, do you know the definition? I always ask them if I'm interviewing somebody, I say, what is your definition of teamwork? And if they say, if their answer is simply as shallow as just people working together, then I dive a little bit deeper and say, when was the last time you were on a team? Can you describe that? Who was your leader? Who was, you know, let me dive a little bit deeper than that, because teamwork is everything.
Right.
If you have 10 employees that are all think that they're on their own team and they're all working against each other, then your business is just going to be just crap, you know, and it's going to cause a lot more stress.
Yeah. So, I've been on those right teams. Yeah, it's not fun.
Teach all the skills that we have. I can train that, but I cannot train good character. I cannot train honesty, mm-hmm. if you don't already have it. I can improve those skills. I can definitely improve those skills, mm-hmm. but to train it from the bottom, I don't have the time in my day to try and make you a good person.
What do you love the most about what you do, and what are your biggest challenges?
That's a question, because when you started asking the question, I started thinking back before when I first started. Uh-huh. And of course, that has just completely changed. I think my natural God-given gift is to teach. You know why I love teaching is because I have this creative side of me. The biggest thing that I love about like being creative and then teaching that creativity, mm-hmm. is the coolest thing ever is to train somebody to do something, to give them a skill they've never had before, like to blow their mind with what's possible with a few little skills that I can give them and show them what they can do with that. And then stand back and watch them create.
Let them do it.
With what I've just given them. And what they create is obviously going to be different because their mind works differently. Their eyes work differently. Their hands work differently than you do. Mm-hmm. So my greatest joy is actually having my lead guy, his nickname is Happy. So we just call him Happy. We introduce him as Happy. We just, it's like, what a great freaking name, right? And that's just like for 11 years now, he's worked for me. And I should say he's worked with me. He's been through hell with me. He started out when I had a partner in the business and that all fell through. And he helped me just kind of stabilize the company. So my biggest joy is actually now he runs all the production. There are jobs I never see. I have a salesman, so I don't see the sales. Mm-hmm. I don't see the invoices. I don't see, but I know that my team is out there doing the best work because Happy and I have worked together for 11 years and I've transferred that skill to him. And I may never even get a phone call on a job. All I see is in the WhatsApp group photos of the actual completed job or the job in between or whatever, you know. My phone goes, I look through and I get 15 photos of the job completed. And I'm just going, that is my favorite part now. It's not the doing. Mm-hmm. It's the seeing it done by others that I've taught.
What was it when you started out? Was it doing it?
It was definitely doing it. Because not only was I doing it, like Tim Phelps with ICO Products, he had developed these products for about 5 years before I met him. And what he was doing was pretty inventive. We won awards in 2000, I think it was 2006, for like a benchtop material that we're doing in the World of Concrete, which is a massive concrete show. Now, some people would think that's the most boring thing on the planet. Like, you're going to a show about concrete. What are you talking about? This stupidity, right? And you just go, yeah, I know. It sounds weird, but obsess about strange things as well, you know? So this is a massive show, and we won awards there. So that's part of that creating that in those early years was very important to me. And I absolutely loved it. And we were inventing different things, and we brought outside into inside, and we're changing how we were doing waterfalls. And that was so cool. And that's all I thought business was. Right. Then you get into business and you realize that's not what business is. Business is not about what you do. It's about all the numbers and the people and the trying to explain what you do and all these different things. It's like you have a hat on, I don't. Well, sometimes I have 15 hats on, you know, right. And they're all stacked on top of each other sort of thing, you know.
What do you wish that people who don't work in your field or aren't familiar with what you do, what do you wish that they understood about what you do?
In a word, possibilities.
Okay.
I think that everybody goes, oh, I'm going to buy a new house and I'm going to put tiles in this section. I'm going to put wood in this section and carpet in this section.
Right.
Well, okay. Well, what about metallic epoxy floors? What's that? What about a polymer modified cement overlay? What about polished concrete? What about a grind and seal? How about we just invent an entire floor for you? What are you talking about? Is that even possible? Yeah, it is. 100% it is. Yeah. We'll design a floor for you. How about that? And by the way, we're not going to do it. It's going to be more than your, you know, $2 tiles, obviously.
Right.
But it's not going to be so much that you can't afford it. It's actually affordable. And it's a piece of art that all of a sudden people walk into your house and they go, what is this flooring? And it's the coolest thing. And my customers tell me that. In fact, I was just up in Wood End, which is about 45 minutes from Melbourne. Mm-hmm. Up in the country, and we completed a floor over there, and it's just a really very, very architectural house, just like high vaulted ceilings and all sorts of different stuff and lines in the ceilings and stuff. It's just built by an architect, you can tell, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they've commissioned us to do this floor, and basically they just said, we love what you do. And in fact, one of our floors, because Happy and I kind of developed this one particular look, and we call it Happy Gray. And so she goes, I love that look, that Happy Gray look. And I was like, okay, that's cool, you know? So I went up there the other day and she says, oh, there's something like a chip in the shower. Is there somewhere where we can fix that? I said, yeah, no worries. I'll just come up and fix it for you. Mm-hmm. And I went up there to fix it. And she says to me, people come over for the first time to look at our house, our friends and whatnot, and they don't even care about anything else except the floor. They're just enamored with the floor and in the showers, the walls and everything you guys have done. And she goes, I'm so in love with Granicrete Australia. And I'm just like, that's a raving fan. And I love that. And we get that
awesome. More
often than you would think that people absolutely love it. So that's probably, you know, one of those things that I really, really enjoy about my business is that we really make people happy with their space that they live in.
You guys do both residential and commercial though, right? Do you have a preference? All things considered, you're like, I actually prefer to work on these types, or you're like, you know, I kind of like the mix because it's just variety is the spice of life.
Not only the spice of life variety, but it's a, what would you call it? A pandemic savior. Because when the pandemic hit, how do you run a business with everybody living in their own house? Mm-hmm. If you're strictly residential? You can't.
Right.
So when that tap turned completely off, or faucet, when that faucet completely turned off, if we had been completely residential, we're done. But we have this healthy balance all the time. In fact, we'll be doing a residential and a commercial and an industrial job all at the same time. Completely different flooring. Completely different, you know, my mind isn't in the American term anymore, square feet. I have no idea how many square feet, but we'll be doing 1,000 square meters, say 10,000 square feet of commercial flooring, which is just grind it and coat it with epoxy and get out.
Right.
We'll be doing that the same time we're doing somebody's garage. with flake flooring, and somebody's house with the cover stone is what we call it now, with the designer flooring, and all the same guys working on the same jobs. Oh, wow. So the skills, when we were talking about hiring people, I can't hire somebody on skills because nobody has those skills. There's not another company. There's very, very few companies. I would say there's probably not another company that I could hire their employee and they would fit right in my company anyway. So we train those skills, but being that wide variety, you know how sometimes you might get into a creative mood and you're just really, really creative. And then you take a break because that creative has just run out and you go in, you do something completely different. But when you come back to it, that creative mood just kicks back in again. Mm-hmm. There's this balance. So we were highly creative with our residential flooring and we're very, very passionate about it. And that passion burns a lot of energy.
Right.
And then you go, you know what? We got 1,000 square meters and it's 2,000, 4,000 square meters. It's overwhelming when you first look at it, mm-hmm. but you just kind of go, it's this kind of a job where the other floor is this kind of job, you know?
Right.
So you go, okay, we're going to be here for a while. We dump all our equipment there. It's the same thing every day. So it's really a healthy balance. And when I say healthy balance, even mind-wise, you don't want to have to be in that creative mode every single day, every single moment.
Right.
So that commercial work is definitely, we're just going to paint the floor, you know, one color. And there's this massive sense of satisfaction at the end, but it's not creative. So where would I like to be? When the bank account's empty, I want those 2,000 square meters. That's the motivator, you know? But I don't, honestly, consistently I change. I go, man, I just want to do residential. I love working with people. Mm-hmm. Then you get the wrong customer. You go, I don't want to do that anymore. So there's this healthy balance. And in the coaching business that I'm a part of, one of his biggest things is live a life by design, not by default. So okay. If you get into business and you think, okay, I'm going to do this. We all think this. We all think I'm going to go into business. I'm going to do this. And right. then you go, my competitor's doing that. I need to do that. So now we're doing this. And then, oh, wait a minute. I heard that there's a lot of money in that. Oh, I'm going to do this. And mm-hmm. I'm going to do this. And pretty soon, you have this business that you don't even know anymore. Mm-hmm. And you're going, that's your business by default. So then all of a sudden we go, okay, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. I want to do this. That's your business by design. And so when you live your life by design, mm-hmm. then you can live your business by design and everything starts to flow a lot better.
Well, so it's more authentic to you too, which
100% it is. So is there something that I prefer more than others? At the moment, no, because everything's by design at the moment. After 15 years of being in business in Australia, 25 years being business altogether, it's by design. Like I'm not going into the restaurant business just to go into the restaurant business, just because I think I love, you know, sandwiches. I love the passion of that food that this, and we're, you know, the other partner is a chef that makes the most incredible food in minutes. Like the flavors that come out of his food is just incredible. So I'm passionate about that. So I'm not going into the restaurant business. I'm going into business with my partners that I absolutely love. And that's by design.
Is there anything that you wish you knew when you were first starting out?
It would probably go right along the lines of what I was just saying there, that I wish that...
Oh, your passion?
Yeah, well, I love business, right? And when you start in business, you think that there's so much you don't know about business, or maybe you do know about business. Maybe you've gone to the Harvard and knew about it. I didn't. I completed high school. That was it. I knew nothing about business. I thought it was just go sell a floor, do a floor, get paid. Go sell a floor, do a floor, get paid. That was business, right?
Right.
It's not. It is so much more complicated than that. And if I'd have known how complicated it was, if I'd have known how hard it was, I wouldn't have done it. It would have scared me. Mm-hmm. Janine Ellis is a... Do you guys have Boost Juice? In the US, I think she's there as well.
Oh, what a
so she does these. She's worth $1 billion, something like that, here in Australia, and she's in every business you can possibly imagine, right? But I went to a seminar that she was at, and she was speaking, and she says we get into business. The whole entire seminar was in a day, like a whole day of seminar. The only thing I remember from that seminar is this: Janine Ellis says, "Get into business because of excitement, and you stay into business because of fear." You stay in business because of fear. You're like, oh my God, well, I'm going to go bankrupt. I better get this done and get this done and get this and get employees and get this, all this stuff, you know? And I don't wish that I'd known more about business. because it probably would have just scared me away when I first got in. When I look at it now, I wish I'd have known about more about business. So it's kind of a two-sided, like a double-edged sword, you know? You go, yeah, I wish I'd known more about business, but it would have scared me away, so I wouldn't have gotten into business. I think that the thing that I would wish I'd known more about business is probably I wish I had better leadership skills. Like if I had known more about how to lead people in my company, I could have gotten a lot further, a lot faster.
Well, just describe your leadership or managerial style. Like, what do you mean by that?
I'm a chaos conductor. So my style is definitely, hey, I had this idea. Here it is. Come back to me with it. Done.
Okay.
And that's why I hire very competent people. I want something done. I'll manage it to a point and then I leave it and come back to it and other people have completed it. And that's kind of like that artistic value of giving people skills that they then duplicate and come back to you and see that. I love the fact that I'm very open to other people's skills. And it's a whole different thing when you start allowing people to be who they are in your business and not just go, this is my business. You have to be my way and you have to do everything my way. My goodness, your business will only go as far as the law of the lid with John Maxwell. You're here and your business cannot go any further than that. It can't, right? So you have to grow yourself and grow yourself. Once you get up to a certain point, you realize, oh my goodness, it's not all about me. It's about the people and the personalities and their skills and their creativeness and everything about them. So I try to find people's motivations. I give them the work that satisfies their motivation.
Given that that is how you like to manage your team, do you ever have any inhibitions when you're first giving a new employee direction?
Yeah, it is interesting because I used to, like, for instance, Happy, he worked side by side with me for probably 6 years. Literally, he never did anything by himself, mm-hmm. right? And then I started to realize, I just looked at him one day and I'm going, we don't even talk anymore about what we're going to do. We're just two people doing the same with the same brain, the same mind. And I was like, one day I said to myself, well, how can I get somebody there faster? And so the way that I do things now is I'm going to explain something, allow them to do it in front of me 4 or 5 times. I'm going to walk away. If I'm on the job, for instance, mm-hmm. I'm going to the hardware store. I'll be back in 2 hours. Just do that. I probably don't even go to the hardware store. I might go have a sandwich, you know, something. I might get on the phone, whatever. But the point is that I want to leave them alone and see if they can figure it out. If they have the skill to figure it out and I come back and it's done differently than I would do it, but it's done to the level that I would do it, then I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. Because Happy and Seamus, his brother, works for me as well now for a number of years, probably 5 or 6 years. And they have figured out together how to do things more efficiently than I was doing, better nice. Than I was doing. So allowing them, when I say chaos conductor, it is definitely a standoff and allow things to happen. And if something happens that is out of their control or out of their sphere of being able to rectify it, then I'll get involved. Mm-hmm. But I've given them the skills. I've given my guys the skills to give the other guys the skills to give the other guys the skills. So they come in and all they're going to do for like 3 weeks is maybe grind the edges and set up the mixing station for the epoxy or for the cement or whatever. They're going to do very basic, but the whole time they're being trained to be the top guy. So everybody is being trained to lead a team from day one.
When you have, because you have, you know, a team that you basically have to teach from scratch, do you see people staying on for longer, do you think, because of that? Because it is such a, like, it's a little bit different from what else is offered there. And if somebody leaves, what do you hope that they do take along with them that you're like, okay, well, you learned this here, and I hope that serves you well on your next endeavor, whatever that may be.
Very, very good question, because I never want anybody to leave.
I don't think anyone ever wants to, but occasionally, you know.
And to be completely honest, I hope they fail, you know. No, but I just had probably the best experience in what that question is, right? On December probably 4th, something like that, one of my favorite guys that has ever worked for me came and said, hey, Don, I just want you to know that I'm going to be leaving at the end of the year. And he goes, you know, I could probably work for you 1 or 2 days a week, if that. And, you know, I just want to thank you for all the skills you've given me. I want to thank you for everything. And I honestly wish him like the best. Like, I want him to go out there, use the skills that we've given him, the leadership skills that we've given him, and really, really succeed in what he's doing. It's worked out really, really well because he does work for us 2 to 3 days a week. He'll tell us, hey, next week I have Thursday off. What I'm doing, I don't have anything scheduled for Thursday. He'll come in, and because he already knows the business and knows the tools and knows everything, he just grabs everything and goes. He grabs one of the vans and he goes off, you know, or he'll work for the team. So it works really well. I've had other people that just came in strictly to learn the skill and then go start their own business, and very, very sneaky about it, and advertising while they're still working for me. And that was probably the first one that did that, was very, very hard to get over. And still, even to this day, you know, because I hired him as a referral from a friend and we became good friends and whatnot, and he just stabbed me in the back. And that's very, very difficult to get over. So when I say that I hope they fail, that's the guy, you know, those kind of guys.
Yeah,
so that's fair. I would give advice to people that, like, if you are an employee and you want to leave and go do your own thing, you know, being a competitor to your boss, most bosses are not going to take that well at all. But always be respectful. Be respectful. Tell them what you're doing. It doesn't even matter. You know, just, hey, this is what I'm doing, because you never know what's going to come up in the future. Why make enemies with anybody? And so when you ask, you know, what do I want them to leave with? I honestly want them to leave with the utmost respect for their clients. If they're going into business for themselves, or if they go work for somebody else, the absolute utmost respect for their clients and their possessions and whatnot. It's very important. I want them to learn how to create a team if they're not in one. Teamwork is absolutely paramount to business, and you will add those skills to a place that you're going, or need those skills when you're building a business of your own. And I think that, you know, if they leave with grace, then we could probably work together in the future.
Okay, so if you weren't doing this, though, what else do you think that you would be doing?
We bought a piece of property, about 80 acres, it's about 20 minutes from a lake and whatnot. It's called Maya Maya, up in Victoria, and the country of Victoria. And I have this brand new passion, because I'm 51 years old, right? Mm-hmm. And I've never thought about my age. Like, never once in my life have I gone too old for this or anything like that. I've never let my age limit me, whether I was young or old or whatever. I just never thought about it. Mm-hmm. But when I bought this piece of property, all of a sudden I'm going, I got to build a house, do landscaping, make some sort of barns and stuff like this on this property, because there's nothing on the property. It's just a beautiful piece of property. And so I thought about my age. So I would probably go into, if I wasn't doing anything that I'm doing right now, I would probably go into how to make a farm that an 80-year-old can run.
Okay.
I would invent systems, processes, machinery, everything else that an 80-year-old could run. Automation, obviously, solar, whatever we can do, you know, depending on where you're at or whatever. But because I want to enjoy that farm for a very long time.
Right.
And I'm 50, and at 65, am I going to be able to go out and trim every tree and freaking go out and do everything like that? You know, I'd probably go into something like that.
I'm going to get into some more of the fun questions. Describe your perfect day.
Being interviewed on.
I like it. Nice.
I honestly love, yeah. I mean, a conversation about what I do is obviously, you know, everybody likes talking about themselves and about what they do, you know. No, but a perfect day to me is I think I had a perfect day yesterday. I really do. That's interesting. I never thought of that. I didn't think about that until you just asked now. I'm just going, okay, what would be my perfect day? My perfect day would be a few phone calls, solving some very big problems without having to be on site. Like having the competent guys on site that can solve the problem, but there's just one little thing that they need that nobody on site can figure out. But on a phone call to me, I figure it out and it happens. That happened all day yesterday. I took my lead salesman and I went up to about 3 hours from here, right? He was supposed to not be able to make it. So I was going to fill in for him. And then he ended up coming anyway. So it was kind of a funny thing. So it was about 3 hours from here. And I haven't had time to really spend with him lately anyway. So we got 3 hours in the car discussing what we're doing, but he's solving problems. I'm solving problems on the phone, nice. Going in and out of reception. And it was just really cool because we're solving problems together, solving problems on the phone. We go up to a client who has this incredibly innovative way of building houses with precast, an entire house precast, an entire room precasting concrete, and just stack them all up and make an apartment building. And it's the coolest thing I've ever seen. So we were up there, and he wants us to do all the polished concrete and epoxy floors and stuff like that in these units that he's building here in Melbourne. So solved a million problems all the way up there, just on the phone. Had a great lunch with it and a conversation and seeing stuff that somebody else is passionate about, and then came all the way back and driving through the country all day. That's a perfect day to me.
Sounds like a good
business day. Business-wise.
Well, yeah, that sounds like a great day.
Yeah, going for a dive in Maui, that's probably another perfect day.
Well, you started your company in, what'd you say, 2007? I did my...
Yeah, 2006, 2007, yeah. Yeah.
What do you and you've built it up and you've branched out into these other ventures. What are you hoping the next 5 to 10 years will bring you?
I literally, like, in business world, there's like a number one. If you're number one in your business, you're the sole entity of your business, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody else works for you. If you're number two, then you have people. You're a part of the process of making the money, of running the business, and that's where I'm at right now. And number three is when you have nothing to do with the business and the business runs on its own, and you have charts that basically show you graphs to show you how the business is going, right? Mm-hmm. Or photos or whatever. And so in the next 5 to 10 years, I really hope to have 5 to 10 businesses, whether they're small or large, and be number three in every one of them. So nice. Granite Creed Australia will be its own thing. The two guys that help me run it now will run it completely. The office will run by itself. Everybody's, you know, and basically I come in once a month or once every 3 months or once every 3 years and give consultation to it. And I can be freed up to either start another business or get that farm to where it's automated and I'm 80 years old, you know?
Nice. Okay.
So living a life by design. Not by default, and having the businesses do the same thing. And I love my business. You know, I can't imagine not having anything to do with it because I just love it so much.
Right.
But how cool would it be to be able to create something and have it run by itself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So automation in all forms is on your bucket list. What is the best piece of career advice you've ever received, and what's the worst?
That is like the worst piece of business. The best piece of business advice. You know how you get a piece of advice that hits you in the face like 10 years later? Doesn't even sink in. You don't understand it. And all of a sudden, bam, is like, shit. I really wish I'd have understood that, you know?
Yep.
The best advice. And I remember it was my boss, who is now becoming probably another business venture. But my boss back in would have been probably 1994. 93. We're driving along and he had a black Lexus with the gold package. I love that car. We're driving along and we're driving in Phoenix, Arizona on Highway 51. And it's by this little mountain side. I remember looking at him going, what the hell are you talking about? And he says to me, he says, Don, it's not about how much you make. It's about how much you keep.
Hmm. Okay.
And I just went, the hell are you talking about? Because the more you make, the more you keep. It's not true.
Not necessarily.
No. I spent $1.6 million last year making 1.4. So you think that's bad, right?
Right.
But it's like the slingshot, right? You're pulling it back and pulling it back and pulling it back and pulling it back. You think you're going backward because you spent 1.6 making 1.4. How the hell is that progress? But it's like the slingshot. And this is all from Aaron Sansoni. It's not my own thing. It's like, you know, it's like this slingshot, right? Well, when it's time to release that $200,000 I just spent just slingshot you forward. And it's not how much you make. People go, oh, I want to make. And then you go, cash flow, bam. And that's the biggest thing that the GFC, but also the pandemic taught me, is that we were going gangbusters, even during the lockdown, because we had all this commercial work just pouring in. It was like greatest thing. And then the Daniel Andrews, he just did this really stupid thing and just cut all commercial work, I mean, all construction work for 2 weeks. Because he was pissed off about a protest. So Daniel Andrews is the governor of Victoria. And he just cut it off like a little baby, being pissed off about construction, people protesting. So he just cut all construction, stopped construction for two weeks. The thing was, like, the cash flow was great. But then you take that cash flow for 2 weeks, it's like a river just dried up and left all the carcasses of the animals that it just collected you know, mm-hmm. and you see the, like, everything just going, oh shit, I'm in the muck and mire.
Right.
So it's not about that, that bit of advice there. It's not about how much you might make. It's about how much you keep. That is such a deep concept in such a short sentence. Get your systems right. Get your cash flow right. Read books about financial advice. And I think that that's probably the worst bit of advice is the advice that I never got. And that's study finances.
Okay.
I never got that. Nobody told me that. Nobody goes broke doing what they love. They go broke doing the things they don't know how to do. Does that make sense?
That is very true.
Nobody goes broke doing what they love. They go broke not doing the things they don't know how to do. Finances, invoicing,
yep.
marketing, all these things that they don't know how to do. If you make the best rocking chairs on the planet, everybody wants to sit in your rocking chair, and you don't know finances, you're going broke.
Yeah.
You'll never go broke doing what you love. You'll go broke doing the things you don't know how to do. You don't know you should do. Get a mentor. These things, nobody said get a mentor. Nobody ever told me get a mentor. Those, it's the advice I didn't get is the worst advice that I would say. The thing is like, we go to school, right? And they teach us all the same thing. This is how math works. This is how social studies works. This is how this works. Mm-hmm. And then we go out there and we're supposed to be individuals and build an individual company which has a niche and has a point of difference. It's like, but no, we're all supposed to do the same damn thing. You know?
Well, you're taught that there's only one answer to everything. There's one correct answer. When in life, there's a myriad of answers to one problem.
I love business because business is how you want it to work. How do you want it to work? That's your point of difference. Mm-hmm. How do you want your floors to make a difference in somebody's life? People love what we do. Not every single person is my client. That's another thing. Not every person is your client. Don't go out there and try and if somebody said, Don, your client has these personality traits.
Right.
They want something completely different. They want something that they don't have, that's not just easy to keep clean, but even as it scratches and wears and stuff, it becomes its own floor. It becomes their own personality. That's your client. Not every single person is your client. Don't advertise to everybody. Don't market to everybody. Market to the people that love different things.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Be an individual in your business. I just thought, you know, because you go to school and you learn these things and everybody is supposed to do the same thing, that I had to do business a certain way. You don't. Mm-hmm. That's the coolest thing. Be an individual in your business. Nobody told me that. There's so much advice I wish I would have gotten. And that's where mentorship comes in.
Right.
Because now I can mentor somebody else. My little brother in Sacramento, I spent a little bit of time with him mentoring him. And I think he's in his 30s. And he's got a wood floor laying business. And it was interesting that we've been separated for so many years and we ended up in the same sort of industry. It's very funny. But he called me up a couple of years ago and said, said, hey, you know, can I call you up for advice once in a while? And I was like, man, you can call me up for advice anytime you want. You know, so he does. He calls me up and I maybe give him something, maybe a little bit of, you know, just mentoring him a little bit. And so our mentorship in our adult life, in our business life, is our college education.
What did you study in college?
I didn't go to college.
Oh, sorry. You meant that. That is your college education. Sorry.
Yeah. I looked at it like being a draftsperson or an architect or something like that. And I was just like, I realized that there was nothing that college taught that I wanted to do. I didn't want to be an architect. I wanted to be a mechanic. At first, I wanted to be a chiropractor. Then I got old enough when I was like 5 years old. I was like, okay, I want to be a chiropractor. My mom went to the chiropractor and he owned a big ranch and stuff like that. I was like, oh, I'm going to be a chiropractor. Then I took biology in high school and I was like, I'm not going to be a chiropractor. I don't want anything to do with anything like that. I want to be a doctor. I don't want to be anything like that. And I just went, you know, I love Porsches and Jaguars and stuff like that. And so in 1989, I think it was, I got a job at a place called Cars of Distinction, and they worked on Jaguars. I love the name. Still to this day, I love that name. And so I just followed my passion and just went, I want to be a mechanic, you know. And I started as an apprentice as a mechanic and loved that for a while until I realized that my short-term memory is not long enough to put bolts very tight on a wheel or something like that. And went, I don't want to kill somebody, you know.
Yeah, there's minor detail there with the
mechanics. I mean, and after that, I followed my passion and went into jewelry making and loved that. Absolutely loved it. ended up with several pieces in galleries and Hard Rock Cafe and stuff like that. That was really
cool.
I made a ring just out of passion. I just made this ring. This is a short story. I promise. I made this ring, right? I called it my rose garden. It was literally like a carving of a rose on this side from a side view and a top view on this side, and put a cabochon amethyst in it.
Wow.
And then put little vines with roses all around the whole thing. It was just a very intricate, almost old world kind of looking ring out of silver. I cast it. Uh-huh. And I was talking to this guy, and it was when the internet was just being invented, pretty much. We're emailing back and forth back in 95, something like that, 94, 95. And I made this ring, and he mentions, it was a good friend of mine. And he mentioned, he goes, oh, I like art for art's sake, something that's been done just for the sake of doing it. Mm-hmm. I was like, I've got this old ring that I made a couple of years ago. I'm just going to send it to him. So I had this like little display and stuff. And I know he had a place for it in his house and stuff. And I was just going to. He ends up going to Afghanistan, hunting bin Laden, and a bullet rips through his tent in the middle of Afghanistan. For some reason, this guy is wearing that ring. The bullet goes through the tent and smashes the ring, and it deflects off. Just absolutely demolishes the ring, breaks his finger, but he still had his hand because of that ring. I was like, yes, that's the coolest thing freaking forever.
What?
Yeah.
That's like out of a movie.
I'm like, number one, that bullet hitting your finger is like once in a billion.
Yeah.
It would never happen again, right? What the hell are you wearing a ring that has roasts in battle? Like, you're a commander and you're wearing this freaking gaudy freaking silver ring with a cabochon of an amethyst on it. I was number one, like, so honored that this guy would even. This guy's like very important and whatnot. Anyways,
right.
He wears the ring. It saves his finger. That's like the coolest story ever, you know?
Well, it life sounds like cool. you need to make him a new ring, man. He's more valuable than anything.
He goes, can you fix this? I was like, can you fix this? I was like, what happened to that?
And we're going to end it there. If you want to hear any other outtakes or previews of this or any other episode, check out the IG channel that is Jack of No Trades Podcast. Hopefully this episode served as a good reminder that there are many solutions to whatever problem you face in business or otherwise, and always aim for life by design. Another big thank you to Don for sharing some of his experiences and just being game for literally any question I put to him. You are an all-star. If you like this episode, please leave a review, like, subscribe. That's it for this week. I'm your host, Michelle McAllister. Thank you for listening.